The acrid stench of chemical runoff filled my lungs as I surveyed my domain from the rusted gantry. Below me, the soot warrens of Desolium stretched into darkness, its labyrinthine corridors illuminated only by sporadic flickering lumens and the occasional glow of illicit chem burners. I, Lucius Cade, had carved this territory from nothing, transforming the ashen fangs from street scavengers into the most feared gang in this section of the Underhive. The toxic fog swirled around my boots, eating away at the metal beneath them in microscopic increments. Everything in the warrens corroded eventually, metal, flesh, morals, especially morals. My hand instinctively moved to the jagged scar running from my left temple to jaw, a reminder of my first territorial dispute 15 years ago. The man who gave me that scar now fertilized one of our corpse starch processing vats. Through the haze, I could make out the distant silhouettes of Refinery Complex 19B, my most recent acquisition. The promethium that flowed through its pipes was worth more than the lives of everyone who had died taking it, a calculus I'd made without hesitation. The Emperor's Imperium ran on promethium, and whoever controlled its flow controlled everything else. It had taken 3 months of planning, 7 strategic assassinations, and a massacre at the Burning Chalice Gambling Den to convince the former owners that their operation would be more profitable under my protection. The memory of that night still brought a tight smile to my face. The Rust Vipers never suspected that the men who attacked their gambling den wearing Sump Rat's colors were actually my ashen fangs. By the time the inevitable retaliatory strike decimated the Sump Rat's headquarters, I had already positioned my forces to rescue the Rust Vipers' refinery from the supposed counterattack, a classic false flag operation executed to perfection. The Rust Vipers welcomed us as saviors, right until the moment my Lieutenant Morden opened their leader's throat with his signature rusty shiv. The catwalks groaned beneath my weight as I made my way toward the heart of my territory. Workers scattered at my approach, pressing themselves against corroded walls, eyes downcast. Fear was currency in the Underhive, and I was the wealthiest man for 50 levels. The acid fog grew thicker as I descended to the lower levels, where it pooled in knee-high clouds of caustic vapor. My augmented lungs, a costly investment from a back-alley chirurgeon, filtered the worst of it. Most Underhivers weren't so fortunate. Their life expectancies measured in decades at best, single-digit years for those working the refineries. Their shortened lives were a small price to pay for the Imperium's insatiable thirst for fuel. The Soot Warrens earned their name from the perpetual black precipitation that fell from upper hive exhaust vents. The industrial runoff mixed with condensation to create a rain that stained everything it touched. Newcomers to the Warrens could be identified by the patches of skin not yet permanently darkened by the soot. My own skin had long ago taken on the grayish black pallor of a lifelong underhiver, broken only by the network of pale scars that chronicled my rise to power. The central hub of my operation came into view, a sprawling complex of repurposed storage tanks and abandoned manufactorum equipment. What had once been a secondary pumping station for Hive effluent now served as the headquarters of the Ashen Fangs. The skull and flame iconography of my gang had been welded onto every surface, a constant reminder of who ruled here. My inner sanctum was accessed through a series of checkpoint-controlled bulkheads, each manned by gang members whose loyalty had been tested through blood and fire. As I passed the final checkpoint, I noted the slight hesitation in Drav's nod, the way his eyes didn't quite meet mine. It was a small thing, but in the Underhive, small things were often the difference between life and death. I made a mental note to have him watched. The command center had once been a flow control station, its walls still lined with defunct pressure gauges and flow monitors. Now it housed Vox units, data slates, and the complex network of informants and bribes that kept my operation running. My most trusted lieutenants waited inside. Morden, whose talent for silent killing had earned him the nickname The Whisper, Vex, a former chem lab overseer whose knowledge of stimulants and poisons had proven invaluable, and Kayla, whose beauty was matched only by her proficiency with a stub gun. I noted the tension in the room immediately. Conversations halted as I entered, resuming a fraction too late to seem natural. Morden's hand rested casually near his blade, nothing unusual there, but the way Vex avoided eye contact raised my suspicions further. Only Kayla seemed unchanged, her cold gaze meeting mine with the same calculated assessment as always. The latest territorial expansion weighed heavily on all of us. The assault on the Crimson Path's chem lab had been costly, 38 Ashen Fangs dead, including some veterans who'd been with me since the beginning. It had been a reckless move, even I could admit that in the privacy of my own thoughts, but the lab's production capacity made it worth the risk. The new synthetic combat stims they'd developed would give my fighters an edge that no other gang could match. Still, the losses had been higher than anticipated, and I'd seen the looks exchanged when I gave the order to push forward despite mounting casualties. Loyalty in the Underhive was always conditional, always calculating. I'd maintained power by ensuring the benefits of following me outweighed the risks, if that equation shifted too far in the wrong direction. A data slate on my command table displayed the day's numbers: promethium output from the refineries, protection payments from the chem dens and flesh houses, production quotas from the corpse starch processors. The last figure caught my attention. Output was down 15% from the previous week. Someone was skimming, or worse, the supply of bodies had decreased. Either possibility threatened my arrangement with Enforcer Taros. My relationship with the corrupt Adeptus Arbites officer had begun 5 years earlier, when I'd provided evidence of his superior's involvement in a Xeno's artifact smuggling operation. With the competition removed, Taros had risen in rank and expanded his influence, while I received advance warning of Arbites' raids and the occasional misplacement of evidence. In exchange, the corpse starch facilities under my control ensured that certain inconvenient individuals disappeared permanently, their biomass converted to the nutrient paste that fed the hive's teeming billions. Our monthly meeting was scheduled for tomorrow at the usual location, a disused maintenance shaft near the boundary between the Soot Warrens and the marginally more respectable hab zones of the mid-hive. Taros would expect his usual payment, plus compensation for the recent increase in gang violence that had drawn unwanted attention from his superiors. If the corpse starch numbers continued to drop, maintaining his cooperation would become problematic. I activated the secure Vox unit and contacted the processing facility overseer, a hunched, hollow-eyed man named Grell. His explanation for the production shortfall involved mechanical failures and increased competition from rival processors, but his nervous tone suggested there was more to the story. I terminated the call with a promise to inspect the facility personally the following day. Grell's audible swallow of fear was satisfying, but did little to alleviate my growing sense of unease. The night cycle brought little respite from the constant industrial drone of the hive. From my private quarters, I reviewed security feeds from key locations throughout my territory. Most showed the expected scenes: workers trudging between shifts, gang members patrolling their assigned routes, the occasional altercation quickly suppressed by my enforcers. It was the feed from Refinery 19B that caught my attention. Vex was there, speaking with the refinery foreman in a secluded corner away from the main production floor. There was nothing inherently suspicious about one of my lieutenants checking on our operations, but Vex had no assigned duties at the refineries. His expertise lay in chemical compounds, not promethium production. More concerning was the presence of Kayla in the background, ostensibly inspecting a pressure valve, but positioned perfectly to observe the conversation without appearing to do so. I switched to another feed, this one showing the exterior of a chem den near the border of our territory. Morden emerged from the establishment, followed by a hooded figure I recognized as Tarn, second in command of the Steel Tide gang. The Steel Tide controlled the adjacent territory to the east, and while we maintained an uneasy truce, there was no legitimate reason for my lieutenant to meet with them in secret. My paranoia, long cultivated as a survival mechanism, flared into full alert. The pieces aligned too perfectly: the hesitation in my subordinates' behaviors, the secret meetings, the declining productivity of key operations. The costly assault on the Crimson Path's chem lab had been the catalyst, pushing the risk-reward calculation past some invisible threshold in my lieutenant's minds. I accessed the weapons locker beside my bed, retrieving my custom auto pistol and checking its magazine. The weapon had been a gift from a grateful tech priest after I'd recovered stolen Archaeotech from a rival gang. Its machine spirit had never failed me, unlike the humans I surrounded myself with, sleep would not come that night. Instead, I spent the hours reviewing security protocols, checking escape routes, and calculating which of my remaining loyal followers could be counted on if the situation deteriorated further. By the time the artificial dawn cycle began, illuminating the perpetual haze of the Underhive with sickly yellow light, I had formulated a plan. The Corp's starch facility inspection would proceed as scheduled, but with additional security drawn from gangers whose loyalty remained unquestioned. Afterward, I would meet with Enforcer Taros and secure his support for the purge that would inevitably follow. My lieutenants would be separated and questioned individually, their recent communications and movements scrutinized for further evidence of betrayal. As I armed myself for the day ahead, I caught my reflection in a tarnished metal panel. The face that stared back was barely recognizable as human, skin darkened by soot and toxins, eyes yellowed from chemical exposure, expression hardened by decades of violence and betrayal. I was a product of the Underhive, shaped by its brutality and toxicity just as surely as the twisted metal structures that surrounded me. The irony wasn't lost on me. I had risen to power through betrayal and manipulation, eliminating those who stood in my way without mercy or hesitation. Now I faced the same tactics turned against me by those I'd taught too well. In the Underhive, every predator eventually became prey. The only question was whether I could adapt quickly enough to survive this particular hunt. The acidic fog swirled around my boots as I stepped out into the toxic corridors of my domain, auto pistol concealed beneath my coat, but ready to draw at the first sign of treachery. The day ahead would determine whether I remained the lord of the Underhive or became just another body in the Corp's starch processors. In Desolium's soot warrens, those were the only options that had ever existed. The Corp's starch facility inspection revealed more than just production discrepancies. As I moved through the processing chambers, the acrid smell of chemical preservatives failing to mask the underlying stench of death, I noticed the workers' furtive glances. They knew something I didn't. Grell's explanations about mechanical failures grew increasingly implausible as I examined the fully functional rendering vats. The truth was simple. Bodies were being diverted elsewhere. 3 days later, I discovered where those bodies had gone, straight into the pockets of my second in command. The abandoned storage chamber in the lower levels of Refinery Complex 19B wasn't on any official schematics. I'd found it by tracking Vex's movements through the security feeds, noting the pattern of his disappearances in this section of the complex. The hidden entrance, concealed behind a malfunctioning pressure regulator, slid open with surprising silence, revealing Vex's secret. Stacks of Throne's gelt-filled metal containers, the Imperial currency gleaming dully in my lumen stick's beam. Not the tarnished, worn coins that circulated in the Underhive, but pristine mint-conditioned thrones, the kind only seen in the mid-hive and above. The wealth represented here would buy an entire Underhive district, or perhaps passage off-world for someone looking to disappear. But it wasn't just money. A reinforced case contained items that made my blood run cold. Xeno's artifacts, unmistakably Eldar in origin. Elegantly curved fragments of wraithbone, crystalline devices that hummed with an energy that set my teeth on edge. The cold trade, the illegal trafficking of Xeno's technology, carried penalties far beyond anything the Adeptus Arbites would normally concern themselves with. This was inquisitorial territory. The final damning evidence lay on a portable data slate, its security laughably inadequate against the decryption tools I'd acquired from a former Administratum scribe. Transaction records, delivery schedules, and most damningly, communications with a tech smuggler identifying himself as Mago's Derek Vorn of the Adeptus Mechanicus. The messages detailed the exchange of prohibited augmetic templates for protection within Ashen Fang's territory, protection Vex had apparently guaranteed without my knowledge. My lieutenant hadn't just been skimming profits, he'd established a parallel operation entirely, using my resources, my territory, and my reputation to enrich himself. The betrayal stung less than the realization that he'd been successful at keeping it hidden for so long. How many other secrets had I missed? I pocketed the data slate and selected a few of the more incriminating Xeno's artifacts as evidence before resealing the chamber. Vex would pay, but first, I needed to understand the full extent of his treachery. The old Promethium ducts beneath our primary holding in the Soot Warrens had been abandoned decades ago when the flow patterns were rerouted. The toxic residue made them uninhabitable, but not impassable with the right equipment. I'd used them occasionally to move undetected through my territory, but had never expected my own people to utilize them against me. The maintenance access point showed recent usage, scrape marks on the corroded ladder rungs, boot prints in the chemical sludge that perpetually coated the floor. Following the trail led me to a junction chamber where the larger ducts intersected, forming a space large enough for a group to gather. The portable lumen units had been removed, but their mounting brackets remained, hastily installed and poorly concealed. A discarded stim injector bore Vex's distinctive modification, a custom pressure regulator that delivered precise doses based on body mass. More telling was the crude symbol scratched into the junction wall, an inverted fang dripping blood. The message couldn't have been clearer if they'd painted it in meter-high letters. The ashen fangs had fractured. Surveillance became my priority. I activated dormant spy servitors I'd acquired from a desperate Mechanicus adept years ago, their compact forms easily concealed within the environmental systems of our headquarters. Their augmetic eyes and ears became mine, revealing the conspiracy that had taken root in my absence. Vex had been methodical, approaching disgruntled veterans individually, focusing on survivors from the Crimson Path assault. Tarn, once my most reliable shock trooper, had lost his brother in that attack. Merek, who commanded our eastern perimeter defenses for 5 years, had taken shrapnel to the face when I ordered a final push despite heavy resistance. Janna, whose skill with explosives had secured our victory, now walked with a permanent limp after being trapped in a collapsing section I'd refused to evacuate. The servitors captured their whispered resentments, their grievances laid bare in the shadows of air ducts and maintenance corridors. Each had their reasons, all traceable to my increasingly reckless decisions. The assault on the Crimson Path's chem lab had been the breaking point, but the cracks had formed long before. Most disturbing was how Vex manipulated their loyalty. He never spoke against me directly, instead asking questions that led them to their own conclusions. Had I grown erratic? Was I taking unnecessary risks with their lives? Were the rewards still worth the escalating costs? The strategy was insidious, allowing each conspirator to believe the rebellion was their idea rather than Vex's carefully orchestrated coup. Their meetings in the abandoned Promethium ducts grew more frequent, with Vex recruiting new members after each session. The conspiracy expanded to include nearly a third of my force, enough to pose a serious threat, but not enough to move openly against me. Not yet. My position deteriorated further as rumors of my paranoia spread through the ranks. The whispers weren't entirely wrong. I'd begun seeing threats everywhere, trusting no one. My inner circle had shrunk to those few whose loyalty seemed beyond question, mostly newer recruits who owed their position entirely to me and lacked the connections to survive without my protection. The execution of Drav, the checkpoint guard whose hesitation had first alerted me to trouble, proved a miscalculation. His supposed crime, passing information to the Steel Tide, was fabricated, based on circumstantial evidence I'd interpreted through the lens of my growing paranoia. I'd meant the display to reinforce the consequences of betrayal, but it only accelerated the conspiracy's growth. I performed the execution personally in our central gathering hall, using industrial acid reclamation tools from the refineries. The process was deliberately slow, the acid eating through Drav's extremities first while I questioned him about accomplices. His screams echoed through the corridors of our headquarters, a warning that became a recruitment tool for Vex when Drav died proclaiming his innocence. The next day, three more of my trusted lieutenants failed to report for duty. The message was clear: loyalty through fear had its limits. Physical enhancement became my obsession. If I couldn't trust others to protect me, I would make myself harder to kill. The Underhive markets offered various combat stims and crude augmetics, but I needed something more substantial. My solution came in the form of Chirurgeon Ilias Morn, a former Officio Medicae specialist who'd fled to the Underhive after a wealthy patient died during an unauthorized augmetic procedure. Morn's skills far exceeded the back alley flesh crafters who typically served the Underhive, but so did his price. The procedure would cost nearly half my liquid assets, a fortune in Throne's gelt that would leave me vulnerable if Vex moved against me before I recovered. The risk seemed acceptable compared to the alternative. The Chirurgeon's makeshift operating theater occupied a repurposed maintenance bay deep in neutral territory between gang holdings. The equipment, salvaged from Mid-Hive medical facilities, had been meticulously maintained despite its age. Morn himself was a study in contradictions, hands steady as a rock despite the visible tremors of stim withdrawal that racked the rest of his body. The augmentation process took 16 hours, conducted in three stages to allow my body to adjust to each modification. First came the subdermal armor plates, ceramic composite sections grafted directly onto my rib cage, spine, and skull. The pain was excruciating despite the powerful analgesics Morn administered. Even with my enhanced tolerance for pain, I lost consciousness twice during the initial phase. The second stage involved toxin filters and enhanced lung capacity, critical upgrades in the chemically saturated environment of the Underhive. Morn replaced sections of my respiratory system with augmetic alternatives, explaining in clinical detail how the synthetic tissues would process toxins more efficiently than their biological counterparts. The procedure left me coughing blood for days, but the improved breathing capacity was immediately noticeable. The final phase focused on combat enhancements, reinforced bone structure, accelerated healing factors, and neural stimulators that would improve reaction time in crisis situations. These modifications were the most invasive, requiring Morn to reconfigure portions of my nervous system and skeletal structure. The recovery period would be measured in weeks rather than days, leaving me vulnerable precisely when I could least afford weakness. When Morn finally allowed me to view my reflection, I barely recognized the figure staring back. My face, already marked by scars and chemical exposure, now bore the unmistakable signs of extensive augmentation. Metal ports flanked my jawline where the subdermal armor interfaced with reinforcement points. The skin around my eyes had a stretched, artificial appearance from the neural implants beneath. Most disturbing were the visible seams along my chest and arms where the ceramic plates had been inserted, creating an armored carapace beneath my skin. I was no longer fully human, but neither was I as vulnerable as before. The augmentations would give me the edge I needed when Vex finally moved against me. The question was whether I would recover my strength before his conspiracy reached critical mass. The isolation of my recovery period gave me time to plan. The spy servitors continued their surveillance, feeding information to the secure data slate beside my bed. Vex had grown bolder, holding larger meetings in the Prometheum ducts and establishing communication with neighboring gangs. The Steel Tide and the Rust Vipers, both nursing grudges from my previous manipulations, seemed receptive to his overtures. Most concerning was Vex's methodical consolidation of resources. Key supply caches had been relocated, access codes to our security systems changed, and loyalty tests conducted among the rank and file gangers. He was preparing for a clean transition of power, ensuring that when he moved against me, the Ashen Fangs would continue functioning with minimal disruption. My augmentations healed faster than expected, the synthetic tissues integrating with my natural body more efficiently than Morn had predicted. Within 12 days, I could move without obvious discomfort. By the 15th day, I was conducting combat drills in the privacy of my quarters, testing the limits of my enhanced physiology. The results were impressive, but not miraculous. I was stronger, faster, and more resilient than before, but not invulnerable. A coordinated attack by multiple opponents would still overwhelm me. The augmentations gave me an edge, not invincibility. As I regained my strength, reports from my few remaining loyal informants painted an increasingly dire picture. Vex had secured the support of nearly half the Ashen Fangs, including most veteran members. The conspiracy had expanded beyond our territory, with the Steel Tide providing weapons and the Rust Vipers offering sanctuary if the coup failed. Even Enforcer Taros had been approached, though his response remained unclear. The Underhive Predator in me recognized the trap closing. I'd spent decades outmaneuvering rivals and eliminating threats, but never had I faced such a comprehensive challenge to my authority. Vex had learned from my example too well, applying the same ruthless calculation that had fueled my rise to power. My new body tensed with augmetic enhanced muscles as I absorbed the reality of my situation. The whispers of betrayal had grown into a chorus, echoing through the toxic corridors of my crumbling empire. The Lord of the Underhive had become prey in his own territory, hunted by the very pack he had assembled. But predators adapted or died. I'd survived the Underhive's brutality for decades by anticipating threats and striking first. My fingers traced the metal ports along my jawline, feeling the power of the augmentations beneath my skin. Vex expected to face the same Lucius Cade who had led the suicidal charge against the Crimson Path, reckless, overconfident, and increasingly unstable. He would instead face something new, a predator reborn in ceramite and steel, with nothing left to lose and everything to reclaim. The celebratory gathering in our central hub marked our successful raid on the Administratum Tithe convoy. The operation had yielded enough supplies and weapons to keep the Ashen Fangs dominant for months. Gangers crowded around makeshift tables, passing bottles of Amasic between them, their faces flushed with triumph and chemical stimulants. The raid had gone flawlessly, 14 Administratum guards neutralized, 3 cargo 8s captured intact, all without alerting the Arbites. A victory worth commemorating. I observed from the shadows, my augmetic enhancement still hidden beneath my heavy coat. The modifications had healed completely now, though occasional phantom pains reminded me of the extensive alterations to my physiology. My enhanced senses detected subtle changes in the room's atmosphere, the way conversations quieted when Vex moved between groups, the synchronized movements of certain gangers positioning themselves near exits and weapons caches. The pattern was unmistakable. Tonight was the night. Vex himself approached with 2 glasses of Amasic, his face a mask of deferential respect. The amber liquid in the glass he offered me had a slightly different viscosity than the one he kept for himself, barely perceptible, but my augmented vision caught the discrepancy. The faint chemical tang beneath the Amasic's usual scent confirmed my suspicions. Poison. I accepted the glass with a nod, pretending not to notice how the room had grown quieter. How attention had shifted toward our interaction. My enhanced hearing picked up the subtle click of weapons being readied, the soft exhalations of conspirators preparing to witness my downfall. The first sip burned going down, not the usual pleasant warmth of Amasic, but something sharper, more caustic. My augmented toxin filters engaged immediately synthetic tissues isolating the poison before it could reach vital organs. Still, the effect was immediate and violent. My vision blurred, muscles spasmed, and I collapsed to my knees, the glass shattering on the floor beside me. Vex's triumphant expression as he stood over me revealed everything. He believed the poison was working as intended, unaware that my augmentations were fighting it. I allowed myself to convulse, foam gathering at the corners of my mouth, eyes rolling back, the perfect performance of a dying man. Through half-lidded eyes, I witnessed the massacre of those still loyal to me. Gangers who had not been privy to Vex's conspiracy reached for weapons only to be cut down from behind. Vex's agents moved with practiced efficiency, eliminating potential opposition with minimal wasted effort. Old Garvel, who had followed me since the beginning, took 3 shiv wounds to the back before he even realized what was happening. Tana, whose skill with explosives had secured our headquarters years ago, managed to draw her stub pistol before a rust-encrusted blade opened her throat. The toxin in my system caused genuine pain despite my augmentation's efforts to neutralize it. My heart hammered against my reinforced ribcage blood vessels, constricting as my body fought the chemical assault. The world faded in and out, but I forced myself to remain conscious, to catalog each betrayal, each death. These debts would be repaid in full. When the killing stopped, 27 loyal Ashen Fangs lay dead among the spilled Amasic and celebration food. Vex stood in the center of the carnage, accepting congratulations from his co-conspirators. Morden moved among the bodies, methodically delivering killing blows to any who still showed signs of life. Kayla organized search parties to hunt down anyone absent from the gathering. My own apparent death had been deemed sufficient confirmation without the need for a coup de grace, a critical error born of overconfidence. As they dragged away the bodies of my loyalists, I remained motionless on the floor, allowing my augmentations to complete their work against the toxin. The synthetic tissues Chirurgeon Morn had implanted worked feverishly, breaking down the poison molecules and flushing them from my system. When they finally came for me, I was ready. The 2 gangers who approached did so with casual disregard, assuming the poison had done its work. One grabbed my ankles while the other took my shoulders, preparing to haul me to the rendering vats with the rest of the dead. The moment they lifted me, I exploded into action. My augmented muscles propelled me upward with unnatural speed. My right hand crushed the first ganger's windpipe before he could shout a warning. The second managed a strangled gasp before my left fist drove into his solar plexus with enough force to rupture internal organs. Both bodies crumpled to the floor, their deaths nearly as silent as they had assumed mine would be. The corridor outside the celebration hall remained clear. Vex's forces had spread throughout our territory, securing key positions and hunting down potential opposition. I moved through the shadows with predatory caution, each step calculated to avoid detection. The augmentations gave me unprecedented awareness of my surroundings. I could hear conversations three corridors away, detect the subtle temperature differences where bodies had recently passed. My private weapons cache remained untouched, a small blessing amid catastrophe. The hidden compartment beneath my quarters contained equipment too valuable to leave unattended but too incriminating to store openly. I selected essentials for survival, a compact auto pistol with silenced barrel, a monomolecular blade that could slice through flak armor, and a bandolier of fragmentary grenades modified for minimal noise upon detonation. Most crucial was the medikit containing specialized stims designed to work with my augmentations, enhancing their effectiveness temporarily at the cost of potential long-term damage. Escape routes through the Underhive had been planned years in advance, paranoia serving me well for once. The maintenance shaft behind the eastern storage chambers led to abandoned cooling ducts that connected with the manufacturing district. The passage was narrow, barely wide enough for my shoulders, and coated with toxic residue that would have burned unprotected skin. My augmented lungs filtered the worst of the chemicals as I crawled through darkness toward uncertain sanctuary. Emerging into Desolium's manufacturing district felt like entering another world. The industrial hellscape stretched before me, massive foundries belching toxic smoke into the perpetually twilight sky. Enormous processing plants converted raw materials into the countless components that fed the Imperium's insatiable hunger for production. The noise was overwhelming, the constant thunder of industrial machinery creating a background roar that made stealth both easier and more challenging. I had barely traveled 200 meters when I heard them behind me. Vex had discovered my escape sooner than anticipated. The hunting party moved with precision through the industrial maze, using my own stockpiled equipment against me. Through gaps in the machinery, I glimpsed modified mining tools, plasma cutters repurposed as weapons, industrial drills that could bore through ceramite as easily as flesh. Some carried the crude bolt weapons we'd captured in the Administratum raid, their distinctive mechanical cycling audible even amid the industrial cacophony. The irony wasn't lost on me. Every advantage they now employed had been secured through my leadership, my planning. They hunted me with weapons I had provided, using tactics I had taught them. The manufacturing district offered countless hiding places, but few secure ones. Every shadowed alcove, every abandoned processing unit potentially harbored other dangers, territorial gangs, feral mutants, or industrial hazards that could kill as efficiently as any assassin. The Underhive's ecosystem was merciless, especially to the wounded or isolated. I pushed deeper into the district, moving from shadow to shadow with augmented speed. The neural stimulators Morn had installed enhanced my reaction time, allowing me to navigate hazards that would have killed an unmodified human. I vaulted over superheated pipes, slid beneath grinding machinery, and squeezed through gaps in security fencing without breaking stride. My pursuers remained persistent, their numbers growing as Vex committed more resources to the hunt. Their communication devices, another resource acquired under my leadership, allowed them to coordinate their movements, gradually tightening a net around my position. Each time I evaded one group, another appeared ahead, herding me toward the most dangerous sections of the district. The psychological toll mounted with each passing hour. My territory, my gang, my identity, all had been stripped away in a single night. The empire I'd built through decades of calculated violence and strategic alliances had collapsed in hours. Worse was the knowledge that I had created the conditions for my own downfall. My recklessness, my paranoia, my failure to recognize the growing resentment, these were the true architects of my current predicament. By the third hour of the hunt, Vex's forces had driven me toward the mutant enclaves near the district's eastern boundary. These territories existed in the spaces between gang holdings, areas too contaminated or structurally unstable for even the desperate to claim. Their inhabitants were underhive denizens whose bodies had been twisted by generations of exposure to industrial pollutants and radiation. Neither fully human nor truly abhuman, they existed in a liminal space beyond imperial classification, tolerated only because exterminating them would require resources no one was willing to commit. The border between the manufacturing district and mutant territory was marked by increasing environmental degradation. Machinery lay abandoned, corroded beyond repair by caustic chemicals. The ground itself had been transformed into a toxic sludge that bubbled and hissed, releasing vapors that would dissolve unprotected lungs within minutes. My augmentation strained against the environmental assault, toxin filters working at maximum capacity as I pushed deeper into territory where few ventured willingly. The mutants detected me almost immediately. Misshapen figures moved through the chemical fog with surprising grace, their bodies adapted to conditions that would kill normal humans. Some crawled on multiple limbs, others moved with bizarre undulating motions that defied anatomical logic. All possessed an instinctive territorial awareness that made them dangerous opponents despite their lack of conventional weapons. I avoided direct confrontation where possible, using the mutants' presence to complicate my pursuers' efforts. When Vex's hunters appeared at the territory's edge, the mutants reacted with predictable aggression. The ensuing conflict bought me precious time to put distance between myself and the hunting parties, though the cost to both sides was considerable. The screams of dying gangers and mutants alike followed me deeper into the contaminated zone. The most hazardous section lay ahead, an area where industrial runoff had created pools of concentrated acid capable of dissolving unprotected flesh within minutes. The vapors alone could cause severe chemical burns to eyes and respiratory systems. Only my augmentations made traversing this wasteland possible, and even they had limits. Each breath burned despite my enhanced lungs, each step threatened to expose me to concentrations that would overwhelm my toxin filters. I moved with desperate precision, testing each foothold before committing my weight, avoiding the most noxious vapor clouds by observing how they distorted the sickly light from distant foundries. The acid pools glowed with an unnatural bioluminescence, the result of adapted microorganisms that somehow thrived in the toxic soup. Their eerie blue-green light created grotesque shadows that seemed to move independently of their sources. Behind me, Vex's hunters attempted to follow but lacked the protection my augmentations provided. Their crude rebreathers and salvaged hazard suits offered insufficient defense against the concentrated toxins. One stumbled into a concealed acid pool, his screams cut short as the caustic liquid dissolved his lower body in seconds. Others retreated, unwilling to pursue me into certain death. Only the most fanatical or augmented continued the hunt, their numbers reduced to a handful of determined killers. The industrial wasteland eventually gave way to an abandoned manufactorum, a cathedral to forgotten industry that loomed against the hive's internal horizon. Its massive form had once housed thousands of workers producing components for imperial war machines. Now it stood empty, its purpose lost to time and administrative oversight, its halls populated only by vermin and the occasional desperate scavenger. The manufactorum's entrance gaped like a wound in the structure's facade, security doors long since stripped for valuable metals. Inside, the darkness was nearly absolute, broken only by occasional shafts of light from damaged ceiling sections. The air hung thick with suspended metal particles and the musty scent of decay. My augmented vision adjusted quickly, revealing a landscape of abandoned assembly lines and collapsed gantries. Deep within the manufactorum's labyrinthine interior, I encountered the rogue servitor maintenance crew. Their original purpose had been routine repair and upkeep of the facility's machinery, but without human oversight, their programming had degraded over decades of isolation. Now they continued their duties with mechanical persistence despite the facility's abandonment, harvesting parts from whatever sources became available, including human intruders. The servitors moved with the jerky precision of damaged automata, their partially organic components decayed while their mechanical parts showed signs of crude self-repair. Most disturbing were their augmentation practices. Without access to proper replacement parts, they had adapted to use human components to maintain their functionality. The evidence of their harvesting operations lay scattered throughout their domain, partially dismembered corpses arranged in neat rows, awaiting processing for servitor components. I concealed myself among these grisly stores, forcing my body to remain motionless despite the horror surrounding me. A torso with arms and head intact lay beside me, its chest cavity hollowed out to accommodate mechanical components that would never be installed. The face retained an expression of terror, frozen in the moment when the servitors had begun their work. Nearby, a complete body missing only its eyes and portions of its brain tissue, stared sightlessly at the ceiling, mechanical optical units prepared, but not yet grafted into the vacant sockets. From this macabre hiding place, I observed the servitors' operations with clinical detachment. Their efficiency was impressive despite their degraded state. Each harvesting followed a precise protocol, anesthetic administration, systematic component removal, preservation of viable tissues, and storage of processed materials. The logic of their actions remained intact even as their purpose had become a grotesque parody of their original function. The hunting parties that followed me into the Manufactorum discovered the servitors' domain too late to retreat. The mechanical harvesters reacted to the intrusion with programmed response patterns, deploying capture nets and paralytic devices designed for subduing potential component sources. Three of Vex's hunters fell immediately, their weapons discharging uselessly as the servitors' neural disruptors overrode their nervous systems. The others fought with greater success, destroying two servitors before tactical withdrawal became their only option. Throughout this conflict, I remained motionless among the harvested bodies, my augmentations suppressing involuntary functions that might have betrayed my presence. The servitors moved past my position repeatedly, their degraded sensors registering me as already processed material rather than a living intruder. Each passing brought mechanical appendages within centimeters of my face, the smell of machine oil and preserved human tissue mingling in a nauseating combination. As the servitors returned to their interrupted tasks, I witnessed their harvesting process in excruciating detail. The captured hunters were systematically disassembled, their conscious screams echoing through the Manufactorum until voice modulators were removed for potential reuse. The mechanical precision of the process made it more horrifying than any deliberate torture. There was no malice in the servitors' actions, merely the inexorable logic of their programming. Amid this mechanized butchery, I formulated my counterattack. Vex believed me weakened, possibly dying from the poison's residual effects. He expected me to flee, to seek sanctuary in neighboring territories, or attempt to leave Desolium entirely. These assumptions would be his undoing. The Lord of the Underhive had not survived decades of betrayal and violence by behaving predictably. My augmented body, concealed among the harvested corpses, tensed with anticipation as I mentally mapped my route back through the toxic wasteland. The hunt had begun with me as prey, but roles could change quickly in the Underhive's brutal ecosystem. Predators became prey when they encountered something higher on the food chain, something like the augmented killing machine I had become. The servitor's domain became my sanctuary for 3 days. I remained hidden among the processed bodies, my augmented physiology slipping into a semi-dormant state to conserve energy and complete the detoxification process. My enhanced lungs processed the stagnant air while my reinforced organs functioned on minimal resources. The pain was constant but manageable, another data point to process rather than an impediment. By the third day, Vex had declared me dead to the ashen fangs. My augmented hearing caught fragments of Vox transmissions as search parties passed near the Manufactorum. They spoke of my corpse being dissolved in the acid pools, of celebration gatherings to commemorate the new leadership. Vex had already begun redistributing my territories and resources, cementing alliances with neighboring gangs through promises of expanded trade. The speed of their acceptance confirmed what I had long suspected. My rule had grown too harsh, too isolated from the Underhive's shifting politics. When I finally emerged from the harvested corpses, my body moved with mechanical precision. The augmentations had fully integrated during my period of dormancy, synthetic tissues bonding with natural ones in ways Chirurgeon Morn had not predicted. I felt the difference immediately, heightened sensory awareness, improved reaction time, and a disturbing disconnect from physical discomfort. Pain registered as information rather than distress. The Manufactorum's abandoned tool repositories yielded crude but effective weapons. I fashioned a serrated blade from industrial cutting equipment, its edge honed on deteriorated grinding stones until it could slice through ceramite with minimal pressure. Electrical components from defunct assembly lines became improvised shock devices capable of disrupting both organic and mechanical systems. Most valuable were the chemical compounds in the facility's maintenance section, industrial solvents and lubricants that, when properly combined, produced substances lethal to unaugmented humans. My first target was not Vex, but the infrastructure that supported him. The Ashen Fang's strength had always depended on control of key resources, particularly the promethium refineries that supplied fuel to mid-hive industries. Without that leverage, Vex's position would weaken rapidly, forcing him to defend multiple fronts simultaneously. Refinery Complex 19B, where I had discovered Vex's hidden cache, became the focal point of my counterattack. The facility's night cycle provided optimal conditions, reduced personnel, minimal oversight from mid-hive authorities, and the natural cover of industrial haze that perpetually shrouded the processing towers. I approached through maintenance tunnels I had personally secured years earlier, their existence known only to me and the now dead engineers who had installed them. The refinery's security had been enhanced since my fall. Additional gangers patrolled the perimeter, and crude motion sensors had been installed at key junctions. These primitive defenses proved ineffective against my augmented capabilities. I moved between sensor blind spots with calculated precision, my enhanced vision identifying patrol patterns and exploiting the predictable timing of their movements. The first ganger died without recognizing his killer. My serrated blade severed his spine at the base of the skull, the wound cauterized by the friction of the monomolecular edge passing through tissue. I positioned his body to appear as though he remained at his post, buying precious minutes before his absence would be noted. The second and third guards fell with similar efficiency, their deaths as silent as they were inevitable. Access to the refinery's control systems required navigating the central processing chamber, a cathedral of industrial machinery where superheated promethium flowed through transparent conduits overhead. The temperature approached lethal levels for unmodified humans, forcing the facility's operators to work in insulated environmental suits. My augmentations processed the heat more efficiently, though even they had limits. The synthetic tissues beneath my skin expanded uncomfortably as thermal regulators struggled to maintain viable internal temperature. The control chamber itself was sparsely defended. Vex had prioritized external security over internal vulnerabilities, assuming no threat could penetrate the outer defenses. The lone operator never saw me enter. The electrical disruptor I had fashioned from Manufactorum components overloaded his nervous system with a single application to the base of his skull. His body convulsed briefly before collapsing across the control panel, triggering warning klaxons throughout the facility. The alarms served my purpose perfectly. As security personnel converged on the control chamber, I accessed the refinery's pressure regulation systems. The promethium processing relied on precise pressure differentials maintained throughout the facility. Minor adjustments would go unnoticed during regular operations, but systematic manipulation could create catastrophic results when executed properly. I programmed a cascading failure sequence, subtle pressure increases in specific sections, timed to coincide with automated safety checks that would temporarily disable warning systems. The process would take hours to reach critical levels, long after I had departed. The resulting destruction would cripple Vex's promethium operation while appearing to be an industrial accident, common enough in Desilium's hazardous manufacturing environment to avoid unwanted scrutiny from higher authorities. As security forces breached the control chamber, I was already moving through ventilation systems toward my extraction point. Their confused Vox transmissions confirmed my success. They found only the dead operator and systems that appeared to be functioning normally. By the time they realized the danger, containment would be impossible. The psychological impact of my first strike exceeded the physical damage. Word spread quickly through the underhive that the refinery explosion was no accident. The method was too precise, the timing too convenient for Vex's enemies. Rumors of my survival began circulating among the lower ranks of the Ashen Fangs, fueled by the mysterious disappearance of perimeter guards and the inexplicable sabotage of supposedly secure systems. My second target was the corpse starch processing facility that had first alerted me to Vex's betrayal. The operation was less about strategic value and more about psychological warfare. The processing plant converted human remains into nutrient paste that fed vast portions of the hive's population, a practical solution to both waste management and food scarcity that the Imperium embraced with characteristic pragmatism. I infiltrated during peak production hours, when the facility's noise levels would mask my movements and the constant flow of corpse deliveries provided ample distraction. The processing floor was a nightmare landscape of industrial rendering equipment, conveyor systems transporting dismembered body parts, and massive vats where the final conversion occurred. Workers moved mechanically through their assigned tasks, faces covered by rebreathers to filter the worst of the stench. My target was not the facility itself, but the overseer who had diverted bodies at Vex's command. Grell supervised operations from an elevated platform overlooking the processing floor, his nervous movements betraying awareness of his precarious position in the new hierarchy. The fear that had been evident during our last conversation had evolved into something more desperate, the anxiety of a man who knows too much about his superior's secrets. I reached his position through maintenance gantries above the processing floor, timing my approach to coincide with the facility's steam release cycle. The billowing clouds of chemically treated vapor provided momentary concealment from the sparse security cameras Vex had installed. Grell's expression when he saw me emerge from the steam would have been satisfying if I still experienced such emotions. The augmentations had dulled certain responses while heightening others. Fear and satisfaction had faded while rage and tactical awareness intensified. What followed was not quick or merciful. I needed Grell's death to send a message that would resonate throughout Vex's organization. The processing equipment provided numerous options, each more gruesome than the last. I selected a method that would leave no doubt about the deliberate nature of the execution, a slow descent into the primary rendering vat, facilitated by industrial lifting equipment normally used for transferring corpse batches. The facility workers fled when they realized what was happening. Their loyalty to Vex extended only to routine operations, not witnessing the methodical execution of a supervisor. As Grell's screams echoed through the processing chamber, I accessed the facility's Vox system. The amplified sound carried throughout the underhive territories controlled by the Ashen Fangs, ensuring maximum psychological impact. When the screaming finally stopped, I left Grell's identification tags arranged in a distinctive pattern, the inverted fang symbol that had marked the conspiracy against me, now transformed into a promise of retribution. The Vox systems throughout the Soot Warrens carried Grell's final moments to every corner of my former territory. The broadcast created exactly the atmosphere of terror I had intended. Vex's authority suffered as his subordinates questioned his ability to protect them from an enemy who could strike anywhere, at any time, without warning. My campaign of retribution continued for weeks, each strike more elaborate than the last. Three of Vex's lieutenants disappeared during a routine inspection of manufacturing facilities, their flayed bodies later discovered arranged in symbolic patterns visible from the main thoroughfares of the Underhive. A weapons cache exploded during a distribution meeting, eliminating 14 gang members and destroying munitions that had taken months to accumulate. Supply lines were disrupted, informants silenced, and safe houses compromised with methodical precision. Throughout this campaign, I left evidence of my continued existence, distinctive kill patterns, symbolic arrangements of victims, and occasional glimpses captured by security systems moments before they failed. The psychological impact of these sightings exceeded the damage of the attacks themselves. Vex's organization began fracturing under the pressure, with subordinates questioning his leadership and allies reconsidering their arrangements. The final confrontation was inevitable. Vex retreated to the massive Prometheum refinery that had been my original power base, consolidating his remaining forces in a facility designed for defense. The complex's architecture provided natural choke points, with elevated gantries offering clear firing lines and reinforced bulkheads protecting critical infrastructure. Under normal circumstances, assaulting such a position would require overwhelming numerical advantage or siege capabilities beyond Underhive resources. I had neither, but I possessed something more valuable, intimate knowledge of the facility's vulnerabilities and a body engineered for this specific purpose. The augmentations had reached their full potential during my campaign, synthetic tissues and mechanical components functioning in perfect harmony with my remaining biological systems. I had become the weapon Chirurgeon Morn had promised, something beyond human limitations but driven by very human vengeance. My approach to the refinery utilized the same maintenance tunnels I had previously used to sabotage the facility. Damage from that operation had been repaired, but the underlying vulnerabilities remained. Pressure regulation systems still operated on predictable cycles, safety protocols could still be manipulated, and the human operators still followed procedures I had established years earlier. The difference this time was scale. I wasn't seeking sabotage, but catastrophic system failure, a cascading series of pressure spikes and emergency venting that would transform the facility into a killing ground. The process required precise timing and detailed knowledge of the refinery's operations, advantages Vex couldn't counter despite his numerical superiority. I began by accessing auxiliary control systems in the facility's lower levels, bypassing the heavily guarded main control room. From these secondary terminals, I initiated subtle pressure adjustments throughout the refinery, changes too small to trigger immediate alarms but sufficient to stress key junctions when combined. Simultaneously, I disabled emergency venting protocols in selected sections while amplifying them in others, creating the conditions for directed energy release when systems eventually failed. The refinery became my instrument, its industrial systems repurposed as weapons against those who had claimed it from me. Superheated steam erupted from compromised pipes in precisely timed sequences, herding Vex's forces toward predetermined killing zones. Pressure differentials created artificial wind tunnels that carried toxic vapors through residential sections, forcing defenders to abandon secure positions or suffocate in their protective gear. As chaos spread through the facility, I moved through maintenance shafts and ventilation systems with predatory patience. Each encounter with Vex's forces ended quickly, augmented reflexes and strength providing advantages that numerical superiority couldn't overcome in the confined spaces of the refinery's infrastructure. The bodies I left behind served as psychological weapons, positioned to maximize terror when discovered by subsequent search parties. Vex's remaining lieutenants fell one by one as the facility deteriorated around them. Morden died at his defensive position when I redirected promethium flow through the section he was guarding, the superheated fuel igniting upon contact with the atmosphere. Kayla lasted longer, her tactical awareness allowing her to avoid the initial traps, but eventually succumbed when the gantry she used for evacuation collapsed beneath her, its support structures weakened by precisely applied industrial solvents I had placed hours earlier. The refinery's transformation into an elaborate death trap reached its culmination as I cornered Vex in the primary processing chamber. The massive space housed the facility's largest pressure vessels, transparent conduits carrying superheated promethium overhead creating a hellish illumination. Emergency systems had activated throughout the complex, bathing everything in the red glow of warning lumens, while automated announcements instructed non-existent civilian workers to evacuate. Vex had prepared for this confrontation. His body showed evidence of rushed augmentation, crude mechanical attachments visible beneath torn clothing, injection ports for combat stims installed along major blood vessels. The work was functional but lacked the integration of my own enhancements, desperation driving him to sacrifice long-term viability for immediate combat effectiveness. The battle between us transcended typical Underhive violence. We moved through the processing chamber with augmented speed, exchanging blows that would have killed unmodified humans instantly. My superior enhancements provided advantages in strength and reaction time, but Vex's familiarity with my fighting style allowed him to anticipate movements that should have been too fast to counter. Industrial equipment became improvised weapons as we tore through the facility, the refinery systems continuing their programmed failure sequence around us. The conclusion came not through superior combat skills, but through the environment I had weaponized. As pressure built in the overhead conduits, microscopic fractures appeared in the transparent promethium pipes. The superheated fuel began venting into the chamber in nearly invisible jets, the temperature rising beyond the tolerance of even augmented physiology. Vex didn't notice the change until his crude enhancements began failing, synthetic components fusing with biological tissues as thermal regulators overloaded. Our final moments of combat occurred in a chamber rapidly becoming an industrial furnace. My augmentations provided greater resistance to the extreme conditions, but even they approached failure thresholds as temperature continued rising. The decisive moment came when a primary conduit ruptured overhead, releasing a cascade of industrial chemicals and superheated promethium that engulfed both of us. The pain exceeded anything my augmented nervous system could process. Synthetic tissues melted and fused with natural ones, creating grotesque amalgamations of technology and biology. The chemical cocktail acted as both accelerant and adhesive, binding us together as we struggled in our final moments of consciousness. My last sight before systems failure was Vex's face partially melded with my own, our augmentations creating a macabre union of former lord and usurper. Consciousness returned sporadically in the aftermath. Emergency shutdown protocols in my augmentations had preserved core functions while sacrificing peripheral systems. Sensory input arrived fragmented and distorted, flashes of Enforcer Taros discovering our fused form still somehow alive, Medicaid personnel debating the impossibility of separation, and finally, the distinctive monotone of Mechanicus adepts discussing servitor conversion protocols. The irony of our fate became apparent as consciousness faded into the mechanical oblivion of servitor programming. Vex and I would remain bound together not just physically, but functionally, our minds wiped clean of personality while our bodies were repurposed for industrial service. The territories we had fought to control would be maintained by our mindless labor, our rivalry preserved in the grotesque fusion of our augmented forms, but erased from our consciousness. The final programming sequences initiated as Mechanicus tech priests prepared the neural wiping apparatus. Through failing augmetic eyes, I observed the servitor control collars being fitted to what remained of our fused bodies. The underhive territories that had witnessed our rise and fall would now be maintained by the very men who had once ruled them, reduced to mindless automata performing endless maintenance cycles. In my final moments of self-awareness, I recognized the perfect justice of our punishment. The underhive had reclaimed its own, transforming ambitious predators into servile machines. The Lord of the Underhive and his usurper would continue their struggle forever, bound together in perpetual service to the very territories they had once fought to control, the ultimate expression of Desolium's brutal ecosystem, where even in death, there was only service to the Hive.